Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
What's up?
I am so pumped about this weekend, mainly because it's going to be fun to hang out with everybody.
We're not even supposed to start till tomorrow, and we're so excited that
already
we wanted
recording.
To start tonight.
Already
and
recording.
Me and Sully, we just got off the plane.
We didn't eat anything. What are y'all up to? When did y'all get here?
Yes.
Introduce yourself.
Introduce, yes.
You go first.
So my name is Chris Stryker. I am a GPR resident from the VA hospital in Washington, D.C.
What's your first name?
Chris.
Chris.
Yeah.
Chris, you got to speak louder. I can't hear you.
Okay. Graduated from The Ohio State University.
The Ohio. And as he's saying that, he's wearing this badass jersey.
In May, started residency in July.
And July. First year.
Yeah, I've been there about 6 months now. So I'll be done in June 30th, and then move on.
Cool. So it's a one-year program.
One-year program, yeah.
Awesome. What about you?
My name is Jeremy Taylor. I am a post-Ohio State graduate with Chris as well from The Ohio State University, and I'm doing a residency in Youngstown, Ohio as well.
So this school where is the school at?
Ohio State's in Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. Okay.
So
where are you from originally?
I'm from Virginia. Okay. So ending up at Ohio State was pretty random for me.
Yeah, no joke.
VCU was my state school, and that's where I thought I was going for most of undergrad, but I just happened to get a acceptance to Ohio State and was like, I'm going.
Jerry, where are you from?
I'm from west side of Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, so you're closer to home.
Yeah.
Okay,
and then Chris and I met in dental school and became friends ever since.
How many classmates you guys had in school? Like, what's the class size?
112.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good size.
You lose a couple here and there.
And so y'all are listeners.
Yeah. Long time listeners.
Long time listeners. First time podcasters.
Correct.
We appreciate that. So here's the deal. We don't get to talk to people a lot of times that listen to the podcast, and we definitely don't get to talk about people who are usually doing GPRs. Payment, I were talking about this earlier. We get questions all the time. Mm-hmm. AGDs, GPRs, residencies. So I would love to spend a couple minutes here while we got y'all, just relaxing, talking, to tell me your experience on why you went to GPRs, how you chose your GPRs, and kind of give me the lowdown. So, Jeremy, let's start with you, and then we will rudely butt in and ask questions.
Okay, well, I am married, and my wife is from Youngstown, Ohio area. East of Cleveland, southeast of
Cleveland. You do realize, though, you can't do GPRs forever. Like, you can't just do this over and over because she's from Youngstown.
Correct. And I looked at some of the programs around the area, and I was like, okay. I went and visited, and I said, okay, I am personally at St. Elizabeth's Hospital.
Okay.
And it was a great program, and I said, okay, I'm going to do it.
So what defines a great program
for
you?
For me, I wanted a lot of surgical experience.
Okay, great.
I wanted to be able to manage medically compromised people and wanted to know what certain medical conditions I needed to get a consult on when I needed to manage anticoagulant therapy or something like that. I also wanted to make sure there was plenty of endodontic practice because that's something that I'm passionate about. And so I talked to specific residents from previous
years. That makes
one
stable.
Yeah. Previous residents from other classes, and they're like, I do X amount of endos. And I thought I'd give it a shot. And so I did.
Because they get like people, I guess they walk in, they're like, I'm my tooth is hurting, my tooth is hurting. And then they get referred to you guys. So you guys could do a lot of root canals.
Correct. It's great for the area because a lot of the underserved patients come to us because they are, there's not as many opportunities for them around the area to go to. So we see a lot of people that are underserved, which need root canals or extractions or anything like that.
How much do they pay? Do they pay? Or what's the costly thing as far as the prices and insurance and everything?
I think I don't know exactly know about the payment because the ladies up front do that.
But must be nice.
Yeah.
I know, right? So tell me, the patient is hurting, but okay, do they have money or are they going to pay? Or
they don't always have to pay. No, I don't.
That's fantastic.
We serve a lot of underserved people that don't have access to care in any other areas.
So tell me this. Is either one of y'all's programs associated with any school or should they're both hospital-based? Are most GPRs hospital-based?
I think that's the definition.
Do I look like a dumbass right now?
GPR is hospital based.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well,
I think that's a very unique thing, right? Because I want to touch base. One of the things you said that I thought was really good was you said you asked previous residents some of the stuff they had done. Mm-hmm. What I find in talking to people is a lot of times people go out and they choose a program and they really haven't done their due diligence. Okay, so they may say, oh, I want to go do a bunch of implants, but they go into a program where they don't place implants. And so what I love about what you said is you said, yeah, when I was talking or interviewing some of the previous people, they talked about doing a lot of endo and you wanted to do a lot of endo. I think that's huge. And I think people need to realize that not only when you're looking at these programs, but you need to talk to the residents because half the time what they're selling you may not be what's happening in reality. Would you agree with that?
I agree. And there's been a lot of, I guess, fourth-year dental students that have contacted me personally, and I give them my honest opinion
of what we've been doing. Huge.
I think if you ask program-specific people, they might not tell you the honest truth of what's going on in the program. But if you talk with residents and they tell you what they've been doing, then you can make your decision upon then. And when I talked to them, I was like, wow, this sounds like a good opportunity for me, and it's where I want to be, so...
What about you, Chris? Now, you said you're in D.C. area.
So, I'm in D.C. So, I'm the complete opposite of Jeremy. I am not married. So, I really had the freedom to kind of go.
You were like, I'm not going to Youngstown. So, there's no way to kill a single, to kill your opportunities to go into Youngstown. I'm sorry, Jeremy. No, that's okay.
I never heard of Youngstown.
You could do that because you're married.
Before Jeremy. I really had the opportunity to explore everywhere.
Like what you wanted to do.
Exactly. So I probably spent a couple months researching GPR programs.
Okay.
I emailed probably over 50 residents from different programs.
Wow. When did you start?
My third year.
Third year. So you actually started looking third year. That's good.
Winter of my third year. After a couple months I was in clinic, I knew that I wanted something more than this, mm-hmm. than what dental school was going to offer me. So I started reaching out to different programs and finding out what they offered, what I could do there. Then May, my third year, going into fourth year, is when I went and visited four or five programs mm-hmm. around the Southeast Coast.
Mostly GPR residencies?
Mostly GP. Some of them were AGDs.
So you tell them that, hey, I want to schedule the time to come in, and they're cool with
it?
Yeah,
most of the directors are there. I mean, they love it when students come in and they want to see the clinic. So, mm-hmm. I took a 4 or 5 days out of my schedule.
Nice.
I drove down I actually went down to, Georgia, South Carolina. And then I just took a look at a couple practices or a couple GPRs and AGDs and kind of figured out exactly what they did and what they didn't do. There's a lot of programs out there that I think aren't maybe worth your time.
Sure. I agree. They're like fifth year of dental schools that don't really do much work.
Honestly, I think there's more of those than there are good programs out there.
Quick question I have. Yeah. Now, when you went to all these schools, both of you guys, when you visited...
I never talked to any students.
Ones
that I visited one down in Georgia.
You went to Augusta?
Yeah, which is a great GPR program. They have a GPR and AGD.
Right.
I never talked to any students from there, but I talked to the residents and I visited the program and I could tell... It was a good program.
If it was me, I would not do a GPR that's associated with a dental school. I wouldn't. I think the strengths of programs that are by themselves is you can do every single specialty in the GPR.
100%.
There are certain residencies that are associated with dental schools. They might have selected. Their molar endos that get sent to the endo department or their implants that are sent to the...
That's what I was getting at.
I'll disagree with you, though. I think you absolutely can do a GPR or AGD that's affiliated with a school because I interviewed at a bunch.
But you didn't go there to actually experience it.
You're right. I didn't go there. But from the interviews and talking to the current residents,
UT solely, like how many endos, if it was a first molar, you can't even look at it. Like look away because that's going to go fourth floor or whatever. But now
it's hard for sure. I mean, we were in, I was in Asheville 2 weeks ago talking, and it was fun because there were six different dental schools. And so it's really the first perspective I've gotten on even dental schools being different. And what I found was that, like, so Meharry and East Carolina both don't have, all they have is a pedo, and that's it. So, like, what their students were getting to do was, like, they have, like, implant program. They're going to place implants as undergrads. Like, that's way cool. Because the problem with Tennessee was where you have a full-fledged of specialties plus an AEGD. I mean, the odds of you... You really had to, like, fight for things. So,
I mean, that's how Ohio State was. Like, we had every specialty there. So,
yeah,
the thought of you doing a specialty procedure, they'd, you know, laugh at you, basically.
So, let's talk about that. So obviously, both of y'all didn't really blink an eye when y'all talked about going into GPRs. What made it, did you ever look at going out and trying to find an associateship or just starting and buying a practice? Or talk about your experiences and kind of, I guess, deciding to do an extra year and kind of how you came about that.
I honestly think I got a really good education at our school. I'm really thankful for the opportunity there, and I thought our instructors were excellent. I really just wanted some more surgical experience and experience with, like Chris said, I didn't do too many molar endos in dental school, so yeah, I wanted to do more experience, and I think it was difficult for me to try and decide, okay, I'm going into private practice and, all right, Mrs. Jones, I'm going to do a molar endo on you, and I've never done that before.
I've done five on plastic teeth.
Yeah, so I'm ready.
I broke a file only one time.
Yeah, so that's, I think, why I wanted to do a residency, and I've gotten so much excellent experience, and I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, Chris?
I mean, my thing was I didn't have any kind of connection or good opportunity where I could go in and have a mentor to kind of show me some of the things I wanted to learn now. So really, that's what it came down to me is I wanted to learn how to do certain procedures. I didn't think I could get that in private practice right away. So I did a GPR.
So what procedures would those be? I'm going to kind of pick on you a little bit here.
Sure. I wanted to place implants.
So have you gotten to place implants?
Yeah. I picked a GPR that I knew I could place implants, and I get to place implants.
How many have you got to place?
I've placed 10 so far.
Nice. Okay.
And have, you know, six or seven more planned for next month or two. Yeah. So it's a decent amount, enough that
sure.
I feel that I could go out in private practice and do very basic, you know, pick your cases. I feel like I'm comfortable doing that.
Are y'all doing guides or something like that? Are you using cone beam or how y'all doing it?
We use cone beam and we make, like, you know, handmade radiographic stents that
that's good.
We put in with a comb with a patient when they take their cone beam, so we can see just kind of where the restoration might be.
Sure.
Just to give us a general idea.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
We don't do anything, you know, guided with 3D printers or anything. That'd be great. So we do everything by hand, which is, I think, a good way to learn how to do implants.
Absolutely. Jeremy, have you gotten to place implants in yours?
Yep.
How many have you placed?
Maybe around 10 by the time we're done, I think.
That's still legit, though. I mean, and so we argue about this, or not argue about this, we discuss this a lot, right? Because there's one opportunity is you do, like y'all have done, okay? Now, can I get personal a little bit and talk about questions? Maybe,
sure.
Like, maybe, I don't know what the question is. Okay, so like,
lay it on.
Because I don't know enough about GPRs. Are you getting paid to be a GPRs, or are you paying to be a GPRs?
We get paid.
You get paid.
I would not do it if I did not get paid.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So
you get paid.
So, but it's not like it's a groundbreaking amount. It's you're basically making.
You can look on their website and I'll tell you how much they pay.
Okay, it's like 50, 60 grand?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, yep.
I think 50, 60 is about
now, what the average GPR.
I haven't heard anything.
There's some AGDs that I interviewed at where they only got paid about 35.
Okay.
Which I think, I mean, that could be difficult.
And that's 40 hours a week, or how
that would be hard.
It is 40 hours.
Yeah. It's basically what you want it to be. You could be clock in and clock out and get out of there, but I think Chris and I are two odd ducks, and we try and stay for.
So did they let you kind of expand? Did they let you go after stuff and do stuff? I mean, because that's my question, right? Because ultimately here, and we both did, we went different trajectories, right? So I think this is a great discussion because, you know, what I did was I was okay, I'm going to graduate. Obviously, I'm a little different scenario given the fact that I had a good opportunity to go into. So I was willing to invest in CE outside of school. But, you know, for me, it was like, okay, well, I'll go pay $6,000 and I'll learn to place implants and I'll place 10 implants in a weekend. Okay. So now there's benefits to that, but there's also negatives to that. I mean, obviously, the education you're getting from that is way more foundational than what I got. But that ends up being the cost benefit I guess, analysis. So another question I would ask you is then is, you know, did you make up your mind pretty quickly, or did you, and for you, Chris, it may have been different because you don't know where you want to live, right? I mean, do you know where you want to go back? Do you want to go back to Virginia, or are you kind of like, wow, who knows?
Yeah, I have no idea.
And then for you, Jeremy, maybe different just because is your plan to stay in Youngstown? Because that's where, so you kind of knew, okay, well, this is a great scenario. I'll go here and then I'll meet some dentists.
And it's actually a good way to meet faculty, and they have connections with dentists in the area that are maybe selling their practices.
Great.
And I thought that was a good way for me to get introduced into the area. So I knew that maybe I could make some connections and then buy into a practice after I graduated.
So ultimately what I love about that is that what you see is that there's multiple ways to skin a cat, right? I mean, you find that everything is going to be different for different people, and your scenario and your situation is going to be different, but they all kind of come back to the same thing. And so the biggest thing I take away from the two of you is that you're actively seeking out things, which tells me, one, you're going to be successful. Because a lot of people wait for it, or they end up until their senior year. I would argue you, Payman, are kind of not the rule of thumb, because you were kind of late to the planning game.
I was very late. No, that's why I said I was shocked when you said junior year, because I didn't know where I was going to be till the May, and we were graduating in May, and I still didn't know where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of folks now that approach us and they say, hey, and they're sophomore. And I'm like, I'm so jealous. I'm like, if I knew, and they're, you know what's funny is that some of those folks are actually shadowing the dentist that they like, and they're sophomore year or junior year. And these people are
selling themselves.
Yeah. And they're traveling. They say, for example, they're going, they go to school in Ohio, but they're traveling to California just to shadow this dentist that they.
It seems like it's earlier and earlier every year.
It is.
In a couple of years, there's going to be people not in dental school doing
it. I don't think me and Soli would have gotten into dental school if we applied right now.
No lie. Yeah. No lie.
There were more competitive
every year. Virginia Tech brought 40 pre-dental students to the ASDA meeting last 2 weeks ago. I was blown away.
That's
crazy.
I was
like, what the heck are y'all doing? They're sophomores in undergrad.
Yeah.
It's not.
Wasn't doing that as a sophomore in undergrad.
It's getting more and more competitive, but it's amazing how you guys have both done the GPR. Now, tell us a little bit now that you have been there and you've kind of done it. Any regrets? Anything you're?
Tomorrow we
tell
should
us
buy
how you
a
feel.
Bottle of Tito's.
I absolutely have no right regrets.
You would have done the same exact thing if you were
the exact same thing. I have learned so much, and
what about you, Chris?
It has taught me. I'm not scared of anything as I would have when I was coming straight out of dental.
That's cool.
School.
And that's
I
a good
know
thing.
It's amazing what 8 months will do, too. Like, that's what's crazy is it's literally like a psychological switch. Because I agree with you. I was the same way even out of school, but then you hit a certain date. It's like, bam.
My gosh, I broke a root tip. I need to call over the oral surgery resident to come and help me.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, that's no big deal. I can get that
makes
out.
Makes my job easier now.
Yeah.
To get that. Yep.
Yeah.
How do you get it out?
Luck.
Screwdriver.
Okay,
here's another question. I'm gonna pick on y'all again. So do y'all know where you're going next?
Oh, well,
no.
Silence.
Silence. Crickets.
So we both have heated debates on this, honestly, as to whether or not we want to try and just buy a practice right away. Because both of us have had opportunities to do that.
Right.
So we're not. It's a struggle between he and I as to whether we should try and buy something right away, whether we should associate for a few years and then take over the practice. We constantly talk about this every single day.
So my ideal thing and what I'm kind of looking for and have kind of reached out to people to find is a place where I can associate for about a year and then have him transition out.
So what are you looking for in that year? Like, why not? So what are give me your kind of argument for waiting a year to do it.
I guess the reason I can't say 6 months from now is because I would have to start right this second the planning process of getting all that figured out. How to buy a practice.
Yes.
And I don't even know what city.
Do you have anybody in your family, dentist, or anybody that
I have no connections to dentistry in my family.
Okay.
Not,
what are you, Jeremy?
Nothing.
Nothing. So it's kind of a little bit nerve-wracking, especially if you want to start right away. So I don't blame you if you want to start actually work for somebody maybe a year or 6 months or 2 years or whatever. And then, but what I would say that I would recommend having my experience is that have something written as far as make sure that what you're getting or what you're expecting versus verbally loving the guy, or you know him, or cousins, or whatever. It doesn't matter. You right. need to have things written on the contract before you start. So that way you know what your expectations are and they know what you guys are willing to do.
Yeah, it seems to be when things fall apart, it's because the two parties weren't clear with what they expected from each other.
Sure.
And that's what I've learned from listening to multiple podcasts.
Right, yeah.
We can agree on that. So, okay. So I'm going to pick up both of you. Are y'all taking pictures of your work?
Yes.
Yep.
We actually have a group chat in which we share cases with our other good friend that's on his way. And unfortunately, he was delayed. But we that's have a group chat in which we share a lot of cases. And what would you do here? What would you think I should do differently every single day?
But yeah, I think we all are taking before and after pictures on our big cases.
So. I think that's huge. I wish people would start doing that in dental school, frankly.
Yeah.
We don't get enough education on that.
No.
I think it's really valuable.
And you can imagine if you go into a job interview and you could sit down and sit down there with them and show them like, yeah, well, so here's what I'm thinking. And by the way, here's a portfolio of my casework. I mean, how cool would that be? I mean, how many people are doing that?
Yeah.
Like nobody. So you want to blow an interview out of the water, take them a portfolio of your work.
Especially in dental school that I'm thinking all the time I had.
Yeah, I know.
Like, oh my God.
You get the best pictures ever.
Yeah. Cause right
if
now.
If you finish too fast, they make you redo it anyways.
Right now, I'm struggling for minutes, like every morning, every day, every second. I'm like, okay, shoot. If I want to take pictures of this case, it's literally going to take me 5 minutes. And I'm going to be 5 minutes behind from that patient and this patient. Like, there's so many things going on in my head. Then I'm like, if I had more time, especially in dental school, we're like, okay, let's get a signature to get 2 carpules, right?
Yeah.
Let's
wait
20 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you, like, let's
more
just take some
please.
Contrastor. Let's take pictures. And that's one thing I wish I did more in dental school. I didn't even know what camera was because we had these big old cameras and I think the only people that could use it were
an elective or something.
Oh, you were taking a test for like perio. You were showing calculus, I think. But I didn't even know because it would scare me to death just looking at that camera. But now every day I'm like struggling to have time to take pictures, which that's a big thing because picture speaks words. I have cases that I sell 10 grand,
now,
15,000.
Are you taking new pictures or do you have an assistant?
No, I take every single one of my pictures.
And I would argue that that's an area where we have got to be better. I mean, we could be better about training our team to do that because that's 100% a delegatable procedure that both of us have not learned to let go.
Sometimes for one procedure that could take me honestly 3 minutes, 4 minutes to just do one single implant, I spend 45 minutes and most of it goes from me changing gloves. Like changing gloves and then putting it on because I want to get that shot and angle that I want. And then sometimes it's hard to transfer that to the assistant, even though I love my assistants.
I found that too.
But they are much better at video on Instagram than taking pictures.
Because they can use a phone. That's everyone knows how to do that.
I will say, you do a good job like keeping like they're HIPAA compliant.
HIPAA compliant.
They're like, it's just the oral cavity. I'll give you credit there. They do a good job of that. Like, there's no eyes, no eyes.
No eyes.
But yeah, I think that's a good thing to do. Well, and you'll figure, I mean, that's a hard one. The whole graduate, I will tell you that I don't think, and Payman, you could probably speak to this a little more. I don't think that a year of associateship makes or breaks. At some point, you got to just go do it, right? I mean, that's the reality. I mean, at some point, you're going to have sleepless nights and you got to figure it out the hard way.
But I think that 1 year, even though if you make a whole lot less, it's worth it long term because
y'all have no idea how to manage a team or how to deal with insurance. I mean, that was the funny.
See, my
what
thing
you said
was,
earlier, Jeremy, was like, "What he costs? What you cost?" And you're like, "I don't know." I mean, you better be ready
that's
to discuss
the thing.
Fees.
Exactly.
Your
so the fees once you start getting in that associateship or getting into the field of seeing, okay, well, this I have all kinds of patients, but yet the demographics are not the patients that I want.
Because, I think that's why we're both hesitant to jump right into ownership is we could maybe do the bread and butter dentistry every day, but we have
I think y'all can do more than that. I think y'all don't give enough comfort. I think you can do more than that.
Well, maybe, but
the problem becomes is finding the right associateship though,
right?
Because here's the kicker though. We all have this idea of like, okay, this would be great to have this mentor that's going to teach me. He's going to show me like how to deal with the team, how to handle stuff, what a morning huddle looks like, also maybe some clinical tips. But then the next thing you know, he's just trying to make 5% off you, yeah. and it's like a really crappy situation. You should have been. And so yeah. I think that's the hard part is we, and that's really my challenge to a lot of, you know, we talk about us taking a lot of crap from the older generations and that sort of thing. Frankly, I think that's bullshit because what I want to be like is, you know, if they were, would be doing a better job of mentoring and teaching, then we wouldn't have so much of corporate dentistry thriving, so much of them still having to work. I mean, we all kind of turn an eye to the fact that the average age of retirement now in dentistry is like 68 years old. Like, really?
Wow.
Like, you're the generation that's been making like $400,000 every year for the last 30 years and you can't retire. Like,
but I do you think also, Sully, that's my thing. I was thinking about it, and it's good too, yeah, you brought it up. Won't you think that a lot of that, they not retiring or they expect a lot of that stuff is because of technology, how much they're seeing, how much they can make more by not really working? So let me see. So for example, they have all this money that they can spend for
I think it's because they can't retire.
Huh?
I think it's because they can't retire. Frankly.
You're right. I mean, they can't retire because of all the planning and problem. But I'm thinking also because they're thinking like, if I spend this much money on CAD CAM and have a young dentist.
I can't go now. Yeah, I agree.
And have a young dentist. They're going to do it for me even though I don't need to know anything about it. And I think that is what honestly is going on. I'm talking to a lot of folks and that's what's going on with them because the older dentist expects the young guy coming out teach the old guy how the technology works, yet making them more money. So that is going to be a problem going in. That's what I'm saying. When you get into the environment or a situation where if their contract is not written word by word, things are going to get out of hand. And that's what the only thing I would say, because the technology is not only going to make it for a lot of people, but it's also going to hurt a lot of folks because they're thinking, oh, well, I'm going to do it so easy. And I've got these young kids getting out of school and they know how to work CERAC or CAD CAM or scanner. They're going to design it, you know. And why do I want to retire? I'll work 2 days a week. I'll have them work part-time or I don't know. I just think of there's a lot of chances of being taken advantage of.
Yeah, I think it's tough because I think that's what we're both worried about and what we're trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
But you just really don't know sometimes until you get in there, I think.
No, I think, I guess I would just encourage y'all and say, look, I think at the end of the day, you've been trained very well. You've had really good experiences in GPRs. It sounds like I've done a lot of good things. So I would tell you that at some day, you got to jump into the deep end of the pool and you got to invest. Because what I love about that, what I love about being an owner, what I love about is at the end of the day, it rides on you. You staying late, you busting your butt, you going to CE, it all pays. It all is investing in yourself and it comes back and it affects one person, you.
Right.
You know, that. So if you can't find the right thing, don't be afraid to do it, I guess is really, because I would say that y'all are more than capable of going out there and doing it by yourselves at this point. And so if you can't find the right thing, you should go for it.
Right, yeah.
What questions y'all have for us? Anything good?
I got one for Payray.
Yes.
So you jumping into having your own practice right away, right? You built it from the ground up.
Right, yes.
How hard was it for you to learn the business of dentistry? Because we don't get any of that in dental school or in residency, actually.
And that's you just hit it right on the nail. That's been the hardest for me because every day, even up to now, it's been a year and a month now actually going in. And it's hard because I feel for the patient, you know. And yesterday I had a case. The patient was swollen right submandibular. And I had even an Instagram video of it that I pulled it out and I drained it, incised it. Patient didn't have any money. She had zero money. And she was working at Chick-fil-A. And she didn't have money. And I.
Now, if you could work out a bartering deal, though, that would be a solid.
Freak. Yeah, I know.
Not to interrupt, but if you could get like, okay,
it's true.
You give me 12 pack of nuggets for the next 2 weeks, yes. I'll take care of this.
Well, Sunday.
Yeah.
So they sent her home because Chick-fil-A is like, you can't come work like that. Your half of your jaw is swollen. And she comes to me and then she wants it drained and extraction. And I'm like, what am I going to do? So I feel bad asking for, like, she has no money. Like, she's going to be like 2 weeks till I get paid. So I'm like, let's do it. You know, let's just, then you're looking at, I'm doing this. While I'm doing this, I have patients that I've already paid, right? So I feel like neglecting those folks. Yeah. So doing all of this is all business. Like you got to think, okay, money is here, money is not. Like dealing with that has been honestly the most challenging part of what I have built.
Well, talk about with your team too.
And the team thing and the making that team. But I tell Soli all the time that how when I first started, I was going through so many people. Like, I would just keep going through them. I'm like, this is not the right person. I need somebody to help me. And ultimately, I'm able to right now, I can say I'm very happy with my team. But that team building as well as the business side of dentistry has been the most challenging part of it. Now, you're talking about all on six, all on four. That is the least amount of my worries when I have a patient. My worries is like, is this patient going to pay? What is that? Like, it's all management to where it's going to get harder and harder on the private practices like me and Sully, because the corporates are paying so much more to dental assistants or other folks to hire them. So I have to compete with that. So right now I offer my folks 20 days of paid days off a year, meaning they get 10 days off for federal holidays. They get paid, and then 2 weeks of vacation. Health insurance, I'll help. So just to be able to keep up with what the DSOs or some of these big corporations doing. Right. So to answer your question, honestly, it all comes down to ultimately be nice to your team and your people. If you feel like they're taking care, like to me, they're like Jana, Gladys, everybody's like a family now that I feel like I'm so connected with them. So they also care about me to where, if I'm not even paying attention, they know how much I care about their family. Because I always ask them, like, I even got my assistants, like their son. Like, they got, I mean, I love to give them gifts and things like that. And it comes back to help me so much more than you can imagine. And that's something that a lot of these dentists don't do. Of they think that they are employees and they're going to turn around and their turnovers. But I don't think of it that way. I want it to be a family that this is not changing for me. Because the more I have this solid foundation of circle of trust behind me, then it's easier for me to sell, to work and do everything while I have my back.
Sure.
So that's been honestly the hardest thing, which I'm not saying is easy. But at the end of the day, I appreciate the people that work with me.
I also think that if your employees are happy, you all work better together.
Yes. If they're happy at the same time of you are going to come across some assistants and some girls and some of the people that you feel they are fine, they're good, they're happy, they're like, but they start drama. They're because you're the boss, right? And they start against you if you don't like one of them. So things get crazy sometimes because you love everybody, but there's one person that is keep making everybody against you. Because if you're not there paying attention, what's going on in sterilization, for example, then you come in, sit down in this meeting and everybody's like asking you like, what's going on? So it is, yes, it's true if they're happy, but you also have to go through some people to find that right folks. So I just hired somebody, or not hired, but she's shadowing me. From Franklin School, Dental Staff of Tennessee.
So we did that. She turned into an employee.
Right. And that's good. But listen, you only have to go to school for 6 or 10 weekends on Saturday only.
Oh, wow.
To become a assistant. Dental assistant.
So be careful.
Think about how easy is that for that person that, oh, 1 minute they're going to feel, oh, I love this job. And then next weekend, they're like, shoot, I hate the dentist.
Now, would you rather have an experience person come through your door that you want to hire, or someone who is more fresh that you think you can train really well?
After doing this, I feel like somebody who has 2-3 years of experience, who knows a little bit about dentistry, yet don't know much to where they got molded into this kind of personality. I found those to be the best.
Okay.
Because right out of school, if you have to train them how to hold their fork and spoon and knife together, that's going to take a lot of time. Then you're going to spend all that time. Then you don't know, is this person really worth it?
Right.
Like meaning worth it, meaning are they actually invested in you the way you're invested in them, the hours. So when I realize somebody has been doing this for 2 years or 3 years, and now they're excited to be in your group, my first thing is the attitude. I don't care about their skills. It's the attitude, the willingness to work, the willingness to work with the team. And I honestly don't even ask the person. I ask my team, how do you feel about this girl? And most of the ones that I love are the ones that my team told me I like her or we like her than me, because I was always wrong. Yeah. I always thought that this is the not good person, but then they're all like, no, this she's good. And they always win with them. So it's when the team likes those people, the prospective candidates, then I would go with my team versus me thinking, oh, she's cute or she's blonde or whatever.
That's wise. That's wise.
So this has been good because we get a lot of folks, honestly, about AGD and GPR questions all the time. That what is the AGD? What are you going to do? What is, and what you guys kind of broke it down to very experienced going into visiting and asking ex-residents.
Yeah. Yeah, I think asking former residents is huge.
Yeah.
And I think visiting the program, because you really don't know what the program's like until you get there. You see the residents work with the staff dentist.
Yeah.
You see them work with their assistants. You see what kind of materials they have.
Yeah.
What kind of access to technology they have, what their lab looks like. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really don't know until you go to that program and you see firsthand what the program is like.
Yeah.
Jerry? So I would definitely advise anyone looking into residency, reach out to old residents.
How do you find them right now? Facebook or?
Honestly, Google the residency program. And
really?
I think you can find that.
Oh, yeah, because their website. Yeah, the university has
that's
it.
That's what I did.
And if you, what I did is
Googled them.
Yeah. Emailed the directors and just said, hey, could I get some emails from some former residents?
Referrals,
They're more than happy to give you some emails.
So that's good.
I really think everyone should do one. Most of us don't have opportunities in which we can have a good mentorship.
I see what you did there.
Program.
I see what you did there. That's cool. That's fine.
I got you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. We're all taking.
I wish I would have. I really wish I would have, but I didn't, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And residency allows you to have many different attending physicians or dentists or any sort of oral surgeons, endodontists, periodontists, whatever, to get input on certain procedures. And I think it's invaluable. And 1 year to get paid to learn, I think it's a no-brainer for us, at least.
I mean, you get paid, and also you get to see so many crazy
making that
stuff
money.
That you haven't
so
even seen.
So much money.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, this has been, I love it. Fantastic. We'll record again.
We will.
In other news, everybody come to Hinman. Booth 855.
855. We're going to be at Hinman.
Rocking and rolling, baby. Live recording.
It's going to be a big, big event. The best dental meeting of the South.
Especially when we're there. I love it.
Yes.
All right. Well, hey, thank you both. It's been fun. And we will record again. Everybody work harder, not smarter. Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. We're still live from the Voices Dentistry. It's probably April at this point that you're hearing these episodes, but the content's still good. It applies, I promise. This morning, first kicking off the day, we have Dr. Brian Laskin. You're about to start your own podcast.
Yeah, we've recorded 8 episodes, haven't released them yet.
Oh my gosh, you are way ahead of the game then.
Well,
I think I recorded one pre-recorded, and then I was like, crap, now I got to put another one out in 2 weeks or a week.
Well, I think it's one of those things where I wanted to make sure that it was not a pile of garbage before we released it on everybody else.
So the podcast is going to be called The Operatory.
Exactly. Yeah, The Operatory. It's about killing the dinosaurs in dentistry.
It's going to work.
Delivering dentistry from the patient perspective. So, so it's about, because I think in dentistry that we're a group of people that rely on each other for the most part. I mean, you ask like, on Dental Town or Facebook, people are asking dentists about investing advice, and there's really no reason to ask a dentist about investing. And so we get a lot of common thinking, and people don't think of, well, what's the best practices from other industries and things we can bring. And so my goal with The Operatory is every episode, have the listener have a little mind shift to see things from a different perspective.
I love that. That's cool.
That's cool. Thanks.
So tell me about your story a little bit, because you obviously are not your typical dentist. You've got some other ventures outside of dentistry or within dentistry, but not clinical dentistry. And then you also, from chatting earlier, you have 5 associates.
Yep.
5 associates. So talk to me about that. How'd that happen?
The associate piece or the side, like the technology company?
Let's talk about the associate piece first.
Okay.
How long have you been practicing?
I graduated in 99. So about, you know, 18 years. God, now I'm feeling old.
I know, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you are old.
Pre-2000.
I am the, I should have called mine the Gen X. That would be really cool. So, my first office was 800 square feet. I didn't even have a break room. didn't have a office. It was three operatories and a small reception area, and that was it. Like nowhere to even like write charts up and stuff.
Cool.
And then now we are an entire three-story building in the suburb of Minneapolis. It's 7,800 square feet. 11 operatories. I'd put in more operatories, but we can't get any more parking there. So we're going to be expanding to acquiring another practice next month. It will be at 5 practices in 3 years is the plan. So wow. It's just been, now we have orthodontists that come in and oral surgeons. It's just been, it sounds like too simple, but it's not. It's we've grown by focusing on delivering dentistry from the patient's perspective. I think that most dentists say they're patient focused and they are from a,
but they're like, business focused.
Yeah, I'm business focused in a big way, but I believe that what's good for the patient is good for the business. Right. That's what I love about dentistry is that when done correctly, everybody wins.
You're right.
And we've focused hard on every decision we've made in the business, and I focus hard on the business to make it so that everybody wins, the staff first, sure. and then the patient second, frankly, and then the practice.
Yeah.
I think that has led to all sorts of crazy things. I'm extremely sort of OCD when it comes to systems and clinical systems and business systems. So we constantly are questioning every step of every procedure and looking for incremental change that's better. And you do that, and after 18 years,
how do you not overwhelm the team doing that? I feel like I'm struggling a little bit right now with change fatigue.
Yeah. And I, early in my career, I struggled with the exact same thing. And what I would say is that I have the exact amount of change in my team. And so I have the best team in the world. And gotcha. And we've developed the team over time.
Did that take turnover, or were you able to mold the team members you had?
It didn't take turnover. It takes turnover.
Okay.
That's we are constantly, everybody shows up, including myself. If I'm not the best person for the job, I would tell somebody I should be gone.
Yeah.
Right. And it's different, right? That's not the way dentistry is done.
No.
But we show up every day and everybody earns their job every day. You know, we've got our core values. One of them is no excuses. And when we bring in somebody, we have, it's called the Eyes Wide Open speech. So we tell you exactly what it's like to work in our office, and it's made to attract the right people and repel the right people.
I'm jealous of that. That's a cool.
It's just, dude, it's 18 years of working on it.
Well, that's good though. And that's an easier said than done part for sure. I think having to, you know, go in there, especially when people, when young dentists buy practices that have people that are in there and team members that have been there for a long time, it's scary a little bit to sometimes shift in a different direction or move from different people, if that makes sense.
Every day. I mean, I still get, I mean, now it's easier because I have team doing it for me,
right,
who are
they
better
probably
than
move
me.
The people, they identify the weak links probably quicker than you do almost sometimes.
I think I have the one thing that I've been able to, what the muscle I've been able to flex is I've been able to relatively quickly, I believe, have an instinct of who the right person could be. Not right 100% of the time, definitely. But then what's happened is I've been able to cultivate amazing people that have helped grow things. And so now I have, you know, 6 technology companies in the practice going bazonkers, and I'm working less than I ever have. But it's not, there's no special skill. It's all focusing on what's right for your patients, your business, and doing the hard things, like having the hard conversations. I mean, having hard conversations with your staff when it's necessary, or being able to take the hard conversation back, because there's a lot of that.
Yeah, no, I hear
you. Know, that's,
I'm
that's,
pretty
that's
sure
that's
I was called an asshole by one of my hygienists the other day, so I understand that.
I was going to say the worst I've been called, and I don't want to do that.
No, that's my part. Okay, so let's transition a little bit. So tell me, you have 5 associates.
Yes.
How what are their ages? Are they millennials?
Yeah, they're trying to think. They're not all millennials, because the orthodontist is Gen Xer like myself. So is the surgeon that comes in. But otherwise, millennial dentist.
What's been your experience working with millennials?
Well, it's been interesting because I've had challenges and continue to. But I have a lot of thoughts on that. I can tell you what
I got nothing but time.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what I found to be helpful is that I've found that, well, I went and saw Simon Sinek speak about a year and a half ago, and he talks a lot about millennials. I don't know if you've seen, he's got some.
I watched a couple of his videos.
Great perspective, I think, about how this is his words, not mine, right? That it's not his. I'm probably butchering his topic, but that millennials have grown up in an atmosphere that has led them to really not have leadership, not be managed. When by managed, I don't being told what to do. So not how to do things, but what to do. And so there's an expectation of going from the base of the mountain to the top, like immediately, right?
Right.
And I also think that there's the convergence of mobile and social has led to breakdown in standard human interaction. And so
we're a product of environment.
Yeah. Agree. Yeah. And I'm not talking about specifically about my dentists because they're rock stars.
Oh, sure.
Right?
I see what you're saying.
But there's a miscommunication between Gen Xers and you know, millennials, I believe, because we were kind of growing up like I was like, you know, drill sergeant execution mode all of the time. And what I've found to be, well, taking Simon Sinek does a really good job explaining the problem.
Yeah.
But there was no actionable, like, so when you go back to the office, what are you going to do? So I thought about it and I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take off my execution hat and just have normal conversations with these as human beings.
Yeah.
Which sounds totally stupid, but I had to make a concerted effort to do that. Because like Simon Sinek says, it's our problem, not millennials. And to be honest, I mean, that's been transformative. You know,
it's huge.
Yeah.
So I sometimes call it that like checking your ego at the door. Because I think for a lot of older dentists, I say older. I see it as dentists who have been on there who are not millennials, you know, and who are ready to hire associates or bring in associates. I think that there's sometimes, and we're all competitive. A lot of us are type A, and so we have this. We've built this practice, right, and we've built this machine, and so we kind of expect them to come in, and so we don't respond well to that.
Yeah,
you know, if that makes sense, and so. That becomes so. I always say the season. The older dentist has an issue with an ego, and the younger dentist has an entitlement issue. And if we can check both of those at the door, then gosh, we could do something special. Oh,
completely. Yeah, yeah. I agree. You know, a lot of I think one advantage that I've had in communicating with millennials is that I am wired to be an entrepreneur, and I hang out with a bunch of entrepreneurs, and it's like. I think about like comedians talk about other comedians and like the, you know, like they get each other. And one of the wirings that I have from an entrepreneur is not to care what other people think, which is, and so there's kind of a similarity between the millennial profile and the entrepreneurial profile. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, the difference is that I am so my type A is in like, let's move the things forward. Whereas the millennial type A, I think is more about lifestyle, which those two don't
100%.
Up. And so that's been a educational piece for me to kind of figure out.
So what actionable steps would you encourage, the 40 and up crowd who's bringing in associates, who's hiring millennials, who's trying to make that work or who's struggled, where would you tell them that they need to start or what do they need to do differently?
Well,
cause like I would joke with T-Bone all the time. He's my, one of my buddies. And, he's gone through like five associates and can't keep one of them. So at some point I'm like, dude, maybe it's time to look at you and not us. Like quit bashing us. Maybe you need to do something different.
There's one common denominator in our field relationships, right? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. This is all sort of what's worked for me with the total rock stars that I work with. But, chilling out, like taking a step back and going, you know what, the person on the other side of the chair isn't always the problem. I mean, it sounds stupid, but that's exactly the case.
Yeah.
I think dentists like, oh, they should come and learn from me. You know, BS. Frankly, when I got out of dental school, I was a total hack compared to these dentists that I've hired. They come out and you think, oh my gosh, I'm going to teach them everything. And they're rock star dentists. I mean, I think dentists graduating from dental school now are so much better prepared for clinical dentistry. You know, the difference is in the communication skills with patients, I think more,
right? I
think
it's huge.
Yeah, and just recognizing that that's the issue and maybe coaching on the, you know, on the soft skills of dentistry more. And frankly, most dentists could use that anyway, not just millennials, in my opinion. And focusing on the staff to support the dentist is a huge thing across the board,
but huge.
Especially with millennials. The other piece is I think I've done some sort of basic talking with dentists. For example, well, one big issue with millennial dentists that's worse for you guys than than the older generation, my generation, whatever, is like the debt load that you guys have, and it feels oppressive. And,
exactly.
And that's gotten worse. And so I think helping the millennial dentist sort of deal with that issue is huge, because I don't know about, you know, as a group, but you know your peers much better than I do. I have a smaller sample size, but that's, I've been surprised at how, and maybe it's just kind of my wiring versus the average dentist wiring, but that's, you know, just today somebody was saying, I don't know, why would anybody go to dental school when you come out with all this debt? And I'm looking at it going, it's a fantastic business opportunity, yeah. Right? But there's a lot of millennial dentists don't feel that way. And that was not the same when I graduated from school. Nobody felt like, everybody complained about debt, obviously, but it didn't feel like the same level of oppression.
Well, and part of that is, I think we've got to stop making excuses for stuff too, right? Because I think the more we talk about that, and the more we talk about how, you know, it has to be talked about. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying to not talk about it. I'm just saying that to me, it's way more important to focus on, okay, well, how can I generate and move past this? This is inevitable. This is what it is. The debt is what it is. But now I've graduated. So how do I overcome this and be successful? Well, if you look at all the successful people, okay, in that era in dentistry, and you talk to your peers that are really successful, most of them, what they probably did is kept spending money. Within their practice. I'm not saying buy a car or whatever, but they kept investing in their education. They kept moving forward in a direction. So I wish we would take a little bit of a twist differently and say, instead of trying to focus on so much of trying to battle this, that we look towards, okay, well, that's happening. So what do we do to overcome it?
That's, I think, well, but part of the issue too is that, you know, what is it, like 4% of dentists can retire at age 65, yeah. Right? So it's not a millennial issue.
No, it's right? Not, you're 100% right.
But you guys talk about it, and my generation didn't. Everybody else was, you know, we were all buying BMWs and Mercedes and getting further in debt, but not talking about
right,
it.
Right,
right. So the issue hasn't changed. Maybe it's probably better, frankly, for millennial dentists. It's just, for some reason, it's more discussed, like you're talking about, and how to move past it. I mean, guarantee I'm in more debt than 99% of dentists, but it's because I'm growing businesses and stuff,
exactly.
Like you're saying.
And so that's what you have to look at, right? I mean, the reality is that for most people, when they graduate dental school, that's the least amount of debt and they're going to be in for a long time.
For sure.
I mean, that's what so we get all ramped up about the debt, which is a big thing, but I'm saying, I mean, right, I'm over $1 million in debt at this point, which is, to you, is nothing, probably.
Well, no, $1 million is still something,
Still something, but you know what I'm saying. Some of these people, it's like, well, who cares if I'm $10 million in debt if I have $30 million in assets?
Absolutely.
I mean, and so it's just a paradigm shift, I think, in thinking that I just wish we would start moving in that direction instead of just the negativity and whatnot.
Absolutely. There's another issue that I think is going to become more prevalent, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, because do you own your own practice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I bought half of it.
Okay, cool. Well, so obviously group practices are going to become bigger, and yes. I feel like millennial dentists don't have the desire as much as my generation to own a practice, but yet you have a bunch of old guys like me going, oh, you should own a practice, and I don't think that's right for a lot of people anymore. I think the consolidation of the industry, it's not going to be like the whole doomsday thing. You'll still have, you know, plenty of solo practitioners, but it's not going to be at the same level that it is today. You combine that with the sort of, I feel like, I mean, in my next life, I want to come back as one of my associates, you know, and I think that's that's not a bad way to go. Owning a practice I love it, but you have to be wired to kind of look at the systems, and because my generation didn't have to compete with private equity groups coming in driving business, right? Which we do now. And so I think that I don't know, what's your opinion on that? As a practice owner and a millennial dentist, do you think everybody should own a practice or part of a practice?
Well,
or?
So let me back up a little bit. And so I think I think that the ship has sailed to a degree. I think we are moving in a direction that the solo practitioner, owner, doctor is going to be really hard to do unless it's in a super boutique type niche type of style practice.
Agree completely.
And the problem with that is I think that it really starts with, and not to call out that other generation, but with the baby boomers and their lack of transitioning their practices. Okay, so I think what used to be the model for most all types of kind of manual engineering type fix things was this apprenticeship model, yep. right? Where you were taught something, you brought somebody in, you helped train them, that transitioned on, and somewhere along the lines that stopped. Mm-hmm. And so part of it, I think, is probably is a financial thing that now we have all these dentists in their 50s and 60s and 70s who still have practices. They are too afraid to bring on an associate because mm-hmm. they don't think there's enough stuff going on. They're not investing in their practices because they realize retirement is around the corner and they're too scared to invest $100,000 in a cone beam or upgrade their chairs from the 70s. And so we have a lot of practices, talk about the dinosaur age, that are just nosediving into the ground. Okay. Then they're wanting to sell them for more than they're worth. And so you have us coming out going, well, I don't want to buy that crap and do that. The DSO is going to offer me, you know, $150,000 guaranteed with mm-hmm. time off. With and a big thing for us is right is balance. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a good part of our generation that I think is that we value time mm-hmm. and family and vacations. And so I think we really started the problem ourselves and opened a big door for the private equity and the venture capitalists and all that to come in and do it. And so at this point, I think it's too far gone.
See, I agree with everything you said, except for one thing. You called it a problem. And I think it's a gigantic opportunity. I don't feel like this isn't these forces at work ultimately aren't negative. I don't feel that way.
I feel like you're going to lose control, though.
No.
You'll think so?
As a group, we will. But as individuals, there's a huge opportunity. That's how I feel about it. If you're asleep at the wheel, you're going to crash. And guess what? You probably should, in my mind. Yeah. I hate to say it that way. So I think it's
capitalism. That's what our country's built on. Yeah, opportunity and taking, you know.
I mean, by generation, you know, solo dentists, have you gone to a laboratory and look at the preparations?
Yeah.
Sleep at the wheel, a lot of them, right? And I'm not calling anybody out, but I don't feel like having, if you aren't running your business and somebody else is going to run your business in a way that addresses patient needs. Of course, you know, there's pros and cons to all models, but if you are an engaged, active person who's working on your practice, clinical systems, business systems, you're paying attention to how to lead, manage, hold people accountable, all of this stuff. If you're actually doing what's good for yourself, your patients, your business, I think it's everything you discuss is an opportunity. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense.
It's different perspective than a lot of other dentists because I'm also not looking to. There's a reason why I have five associates is because I saw the winds coming and I adjusted the sales. Right? Yeah.
Well, and the future group practices have a lot to be. You know, that style has a lot of benefit for people. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that lowers overhead. That gives us the opportunity to take more time off because someone can step in. You know, so I'm a big advocate. And I think that's a good. That's probably where we're going. And really is a good thing. The big organizations I worry about are not a good thing.
Oh, I agree
for that. And so that's where I think we have to shift.
I would say the current big organizations, right?
Yes.
So let's create a big organization that kicks ass. That's how I'm looking at it.
Well, and right? really, you're right. I mean, dentists should start. We have the capital too.
Yeah.
Right, to start banding together and doing this. I mean, so.
There's huge opportunity because the way I look at it, the big corporations that I see, there's so many holes in what they're doing, right? And I'm like, well, instead of bitching about it, why don't we do something about it? And I mean, so frankly, I look at that as an opportunity. Somebody's going to seize that opportunity and do it a better way. I hope they do.
I hope you.
Well, or you. I think that we as dentists have left this void open.
I 100%
agree. Nobody's going to be better prepared to fill that void than us dentists. Because we can actually control, let's just, the elephant in the room with it is quality of care, I believe, right? And who better than a bunch of dentists to address the quality of care issue if you're active about it, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't want to do it, then you're going to join them, right? Or compete against them. I think there's so many opportunities to compete with them. So I look at it as a huge opportunity. I think there's some negative trends, but then if you look at, like I said, in the era of a bunch of solo dentists, I don't know if the quality of care was fantastically then too.
Yeah,
you know?
I always remember that. Yeah. When was the last time a lab called you and told you to send them an impression?
Exactly.
I don't think you're prepping everything that good.
Yeah.
You know? So
it's on you as a dentist to control the quality of care.
So at what point do then so what is your kind of what would you say then to the new graduate?
I think I was just having this discussion with somebody who was a millennial dentist, and because they were like, basically they were saying, why do you do all these stupid, I mean, how much is enough? Basically, I get that conversation all the time.
Because it's not about the enough. It's just about something else. Probably it's just it's the excitement or the, I'm sure that's probably.
Well, I love, I mean, like this discussion's a perfect example. I went to a course and they said, ask your significant other, like, what's your biggest flaw, right? I didn't even finish saying the question. And my wife was like, you can't say no to an opportunity, right? I'm wired to invent things. Yeah. So I'm constantly looking for a better way, right? And that's and for me, it's about impact. I want to have the most impact I can. Now, that's not everybody wants that, right? Some people want lifestyle, whatever, yeah. Right? So, and I don't think that millennial dentists are different. They're people just like every other person. You kind of have to be introspective and say, what do you actually want? And then be intentional about going after it. If you want to be a freak like me and exploit every opportunity, that's there's way more than enough opportunities. Or if you want to do great dentistry and work 2 days a week and have a fantastic lifestyle, that's available too. I think it's a personal choice.
I love it. Well, Doc, this has been fun.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we'll do it again. Talk more. I want to hear more about your other ventures and sort of thing.
Cool.
We'll do that another time.
Awesome.
All right, Doc. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.